Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
When Barack Obama was elected president, he found himself in a hole so deep that he couldn't see the outside world. It was like the Chilean miners. But he, being the man that he is, rolled up his sleeves and said, I'm going to get us out of this hole.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work like a slave.
Imagine this is Michael Savage filling in for Michael Savage. I'm afraid Michael can't be with us today. He's a little tired. His voice is not doing well because of the excitement he's had for his book, Trickle Up Poverty. Michael is recuperating today, and I, Michael Savage, will be filling in for him. Now, if you think this is a case of schizophrenia, you're wrong. This was meant to get your attention. Welcome to the Savage Nation. There's a lot to talk about in the Savage Nation today. I mean, you listen to Harry Reid, and you don't know what he's talking about. First of all, it's eerie. His voice sounded like a newsreel from the 1930s. Didn't it sound like a guy announcing like a dirigible just crashed and caught fire in Newark or something? I mean, that was an odd voice for Harry Reid. Always plays, you know, Mr. Milquetoast. He hides all of his passion. So when he becomes passionate, he actually sounds as though he's a newsreel reporter from the 1930s. But that's irrelevant. The irrelevant point is, what the hell was he talking about? He came here, he was like a Chilean miner? And he hasn't stopped digging. He's just dug her into a deeper hole. The man inherited a $1 trillion debt. Obama. That's what he got. They threw him a hot potato. We know that. Okay? So his answer is to make it into a $3 trillion debt and raise the unemployment? That's his idea of solving America's problems? Play Blue Monday for me again, because I don't understand what he's doing.
Blue Monday.
All right, turn it off. Don't play it again. There once was a senator named Feingold. He came from a state named Wisconsin. And then there came a Senate candidate named Ron Johnson who said, I've never been to Washington, D.C., and he's ahead by about 15 points. Now, how do you explain it? How do you explain that an unknown businessman is pushing out a long-term incumbent named Russ Feingold? Answer, it's quite easy, because most incumbents are going to be thrown out. Answer, why? Because they're all corrupt and incompetent. Answer, because they're all socialists. Particularly the Democrats. So it's not unusual that you'd see a businessman favored to take down a three-term Democrat Senator Russ Feingold. Even CNN has a survey which shows that the new guy is ahead by an 8-point lead. And who was that as a headliner for Feingold? None other than Michelle Obama on Wednesday. So the Obamas are really running. They're embarrassing themselves, and they're cheapening the presidency, to be honest with you. Do you think that Obama is making the presidency look better or worse? I mean, don't call me on that. I mean, that's the real question. You know, I have words for this that I can't use on the show, but I believe that he's cheapened the White House in his behavior. And something is very wrong with the picture that he'd be out on the stump for incumbents who are losing because they have no popular support. They never did have popular support. They had union support. They had the goon support. Most people stayed home. What have I told you for years in the Savage Nation? I've said a few things over the 16 years I've been in the air. One, I said women will save America. Remember I said that to you years ago? I said women will save America. Why did I say women will save America? I told you the story about childhood cancer, the years I was in the research field, and how it was the women who recognized that their children were dying not from cancer in the hospital, but they were dying from starvation owing to the hospital diet, which was imposing malnutrition on the children. And the great doctor would come in and say, your child's not doing well. And the mother would say, my child is in here to be treated for cancer, and you're starving that child to death. The hospital diet was so deficient that children were actually starving and dying from starvation rather than the cancer and the cancer treatment. And it was the mothers hovering over their children who said to the doctor, "You're starving my child to death," who brought about some changes in the hospital diet. And based upon that observation, I then told you that it will be women. I told you this at least 10 years ago. It will be women who save America. Now look around the country. Sharon Angle, Nevada, she may save that state. Wherever you look, Delaware, she may save that state. Wherever you look, it's Tea Party candidate women. But Sarah Palin, who've rolled up their sleeves and said, "We're going to take on the Old Boy Network." The Old Boy Network, as you well know, are the millionaire Democrats. The corrupt millionaire Democrats are being thrown out by fundamentally working class women. And the so-called arista hate them. They hate the women for being like this. So how do you explain Feingold being behind like this to an unknown man who says he's never been to Washington? They say Johnson owes much of his quick political success to the Tea Party. He picked up the support of the conservative movement early this year with fiery speeches at Tea Party rallies. He said, "America needs to be pulled back from the brink of socialism and state control." He is an unabashed conservative who runs a medical packaging company in Oshkosh. So there it is. The people know what socialism is. No matter how many times Obama and his cronies scream it's not socialism, you know it is. Now, I am, in essence, the equivalent of the Tea Party of radio. I, Michael Savage, have been the equivalent of the Tea Party of radio for many, many years. How did Trickle Up Poverty become the number one best-selling book on Amazon.com within the first week without the help of Fox News, without the help of the high and mighty who said that Michael Savage was too extreme, that I made people uncomfortable? It's because I broke away from the establishment of the fake conservative movement a long time ago. Talk radio has come back with a roar. The media loudly proclaimed that the blogosphere was the big new thing, that everyone would gravitate towards the internet, that radio was for old men, that there was no media for old men. Well, they were wrong. The fact is that the success of Michael Savage's new book is based entirely upon talk radio, and I'm going to tell you about it over and over again until you understand what I'm talking to you about. I went to the Sierra Nevada this weekend with a friend and Mrs. S. Long car ride in the van, the 05 Chevy conversion van, up Highway 80, up into the High Sierra. You start at 100 feet of altitude, and you wind up at 7,200 at the summit. You go over Emigrant Pass. You go over where they got stuck and ate each other, allegedly, you know, where the Donner Party ate each other up there. But go up to the High Sierra, and in this car ride, we had my friend brought Trickle Up Poverty with him. I actually don't have to read my own book because I wrote it. He's a physicist, he's a PhD, and he was reading the book. He actually read the book. He's one of the few people who read it. And he kept saying, "Oh my God, I didn't know this. Oh my God, I didn't know that." He said, "You've got to read this on the air." I said, "I can't do it. I can't just read my book on the air. People will get bored." He said, "No, you have to do this. You have to disclose what Obama's done and what Obama's going to do." So I don't want to do that on the show. What I want to do is ask you this. The book has been out for 2 weeks. Have you found any information or facts in that book about Obama and his minions that you think should be shared with America? I'd like you to call the show today and tell us what those sentences are that struck a chord with you on the Savage Nation. You can do it by dialing 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com website. And we'll do that because I want to know what you have found to be interesting, not what I think is interesting. You understand? So that's what I want you to do. That's what we're going to do a little bit of today. Would you like me to tell you about the High Sierra at this time of year? I'll do it without any kind of malicious intent. And I will begin with a fable that I believe comes from, it could be Denmark. If anyone actually knows the fable and can call in the show and tell us who wrote the fable and what it is, I'll give you a free copy of Trickle Up. It was like this. There was a very wealthy man in, I think, Sweden or Denmark. I don't remember, as the story goes. He owned forests of trees within which he built a beautiful resort. And it was one of the most popular resorts in the history of his country. And people would go there for the air and for the beauty of the forest. But then he became greedy and he started to sell the trees off for lumber. And eventually he denuded the entire forest around the hotel. So all that was left was the hotel and a stripped-out forest behind it. But the people kept coming. And as the people came to this resort, they would say to each other, isn't it beautiful up here? Don't you just love the landscape? Now, remember, this is a landscape that had disappeared. The trees had been cut down for the lumber by the man who owned the hotel, who was greedy and he wanted the profit from the trees. Eventually, of course, the people caught on and they stopped going to the resort because there was no longer a forest. This is a story about greed. And this is also a story about people who are programmed and don't even know what's going on around themselves. You drive for 4 hours. I thought I was going to go to the equivalent of the Will Rogers Sanitarium to get the freshest, cleanest air in the world in the High Sierra because I love conifers. Instead, the state of California decided to do controlled burns in the surrounding ridges and hills of the county way up there in the Sierra. Now, I suppose they have to do controlled burns at some time to kill the dead trees. I know that that's true. Nevertheless, the smoke drifted down from the surrounding ridges to the basin, to the Tahoe Basin. It was as though I was in industrial England. We got up there, our eyes were tearing, we were coughing, we were sneezing, and we said, we cannot believe this. Instead of walking around and inhaling the great air with a mixture of the smell of pine cones, we went indoors, and we stayed indoors until late at night when the fires finally dissipated. And that's very akin to Obama. There's a direct relationship to the mythology that was put forward by Obama. He was the savior. He was hope. He was change. He was this. He was that. But at the end of the day, he stripped the forest bare. And right now, there's nothing left but pollution. I'll be right. Anyway, look, we're coming into the election cycle right now. We all should be very, very motivated and very excited because we all know this is the seminal election. We know Obama's not running, but he is running. This is a mandate about the communist in the White House. I mean, I speak quite bluntly. I speak quite openly. I don't mince words. Obama is our first Marxist president. I don't need anyone to spell it out for me. I don't need the schmucks at AP to tell me I'm right or wrong. Okay, I'll tell you what's right or wrong. I will tell you what I see. I will tell you that any educated European knows that Obama is the first Marxist president. Okay, we know this. So America's going to the polls in November to say yes to socialism or no to socialism. Anyone affiliated with Obama, we all know, will clearly, well, let's put it another way. Let me rephrase the question. Anyone who he is campaigning for, who does not get reelected, will not get reelected because he's too closely tied to the president. Let's put it to you that way. So again, I ask you, why do you suppose there's going to be a tidal wave that's coming in 2 weeks? It's not so much because there's going to be new voters at all. It's because the silenced majority, who I have defined for 16 years, Agnew called you the silent majority. But under the socialist communist media that we have, the government media complex, you have become silenced. The silenced majority has not voted in a long time. The silenced majority listened to the Savage Nation and other conservative talk shows. The silenced majority have created small groups, grassroots groups called Tea Party groups. And the silenced majority is going to come out as armies across the land. It's freaking out the members of the self-appointed Arista at the New York Times and elsewhere. They're part of the old guard. They're frightened to death of you. They call you names. They really, you know, the reason they call you Nazis and whatnot is because they actually think you are. But you have to understand that they're mentally ill. The reason people like Maureen Dowd would call Sarah Palin and Engel and the others names is because she's afraid of them. She calls them the mean girls from high school, the kind of girls who spray painted your locker, et cetera, because she's afraid of them. Because people like Maureen Dowd and the other old-timers from the New York Times are frightened of real American women. They never meet them. They never run into them. They don't know what they look like. Most of these women are not mothers, the leftists now. They never got married, or if they did, they didn't have children, or their husbands left them for another man. So they don't like women who are real women with children and grandmothers. They hate them, as a matter of fact. To them, an American grandmother is a fascist. To them, an American grandfather is a neo-Nazi. That's to show you how mentally deranged they really are. And so the armies of America are going to come out in 2 weeks, and they're going to throw the bums out. Now, that doesn't mean all will be well. I've warned you that many of the Republicans are snakes in sharkskin suits, if they still sell sharkskin. It's just a nice turn of phrase. Many of them are the same old Bushites, the K Street mob, and they would be another disaster waiting to happen. The only hope that that I see on the horizon would be the Tea Party candidates who are business people and conservative. Because we are in the last days of America. If we don't throw them out in 2 weeks, then Obama says, aha, although it was close, we only lost 15 seats, and that's the word I want to use is collateral damage. In other words, we'll keep pushing our socialist agenda, and it doesn't matter because we'll only lose another 15 seats next time, and it's worth it for us to see our communist dreams realized. Do you understand that? So to them, losing seats, if it's too small, would be collateral damage. It would be worth what they did to this country. In other words, well, turn it around. It would be worth their losing the 15 seats for what they could get away with in terms of ripping off the country and ripping off our democracy. You don't seem to understand how they think I do. You're very fortunate that you have a man like Michael Savage in America able to understand the enemy and explain them to you, by the way, which is why trickle-up poverty is so popular. And so I ask you again, what's in the book that you found so interesting? I mean, it's already sold, I don't know how many copies. I really don't know. 50, 100,000. I don't keep track of the numbers. We know it's a bestseller. So someone's reading the book. Tens of thousands of people have read my book. Why? What are they telling their friends about? What are they saying is in it that they must read it? Why are they saying you have to read it before the election? Why? What's in the book that you found? That's what I want to know.
Savage.
So the Tea Party candidates are surging. The old line incumbents are failing. Violent. Thank God it's silent in the sense of violence. It's quite vocal, obviously, and we're going to face this in 2 weeks to see exactly how deep and how far the rift runs. Let's take some callers and see what you think. Randy in Las Vegas, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Doc, I have two quick points. One is about the concept of big government versus small government. It sounds like just a generic term, really, to me. But we do need a certain amount of government. If we have 350 million people in the country, we need to have a certain amount of people to make sure everything is going smooth, because we know what happened when it didn't. Second,
Wait, what do you mean? We know what happens when it didn't. When did it happen? What happened?
Speak. Everything's out of control. There's no regulation toward the banks, Freddie, everything. There was just nobody governing anything. And if it got smaller...
Wait. I think you're jumbling too many ideas together. You're arguing for a larger number of bureaucrats and more red tape, aren't you?
I wouldn't say large, but I say right now it's at least enough. It just needs to be good government versus bad government as opposed to...
Oh, well, we can agree on that, but who says more government is necessarily equivalent to good government?
I wouldn't say necessarily more, but I think from what I get from, like, their tea parties, they want it to be smaller than it is right now, and I'm saying if it gets...
Well, it's like any business. Some businesses run with very few in management. You know, usually corporations fail when they have too much management and they're bloated with management, with too many layers of bureaucracy, and nobody can make a decision. And so the answer is to cut the bureaucracy, cut the number of managers. I think that's the argument coming out of the Tea Parties, Randy, is not so much to eliminate government, but to make it smaller and smarter.
Okay, and you honestly think that would work?
If there were smarter people going into government, Randy, it would work. Unfortunately, we don't get the best and brightest going into government to begin with. They stay away from it like the plague. I don't know one person that I ever really hung around with who ever wanted to work for a government. Most of the people I know who went into civil service were looking for a pension. They just wanted to get along and go along and just, you know, kind of drag themselves through life and, you know, just get away with as much as they could. They were guy gold brickers.
And also, one other thing with the Tea Party that sort of confuses me. from what I hear on TV, and, you know, from common, you know, common Tea Partiers,
right?
They seem to be like a big time anti-redistribution of wealth, and they were really into Ronald Reagan and stuff like that. But I recall back in the 80s, during the deregulation of AT&T, they were forced to deregulate and share, redistribute the wealth to MCI, Sprint, Ameritech, or whatever. And Ronald
Reagan, you have a very, very good memory, and you raise a very interesting point. Deregulation was a mixed bag. It did not always work out the way people hoped it would work out. You can even see that in the schools, where community boards took over like cities used to be. Let's go to New York City. When I was young and a teacher, it was the New York City Department of Education. Then there was an argument after the 60s to deregulate and to turn it over to community school boards. I think you know what I'm talking about, right?
Definitely.
And what happened with the community school boards was not what was intended to happen. Rampant corruption ran through the local community school boards at a higher rate than it did through the New York City Department of Board of Education. So deregulation does not always work. I agree with you.
Okay. All right. Hey. Get a man.
Look, Randy, with me, what you're going to get is one man talking to another. You're not going to get a fixed set of answers, that, you know, with a sheet in front of me. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
I mean, I know where I would vote and how I would vote, and I've said so on the show. But the problem is I don't know how the people are going to vote, and I hope to God you go out and vote. But I'm going to give you the traveler's guide to the voting booth called Trickle Up Poverty. Stay on the line, Randy. You get a free copy. I'm going to still give them out all week. That's all. New York City, WOR, Rooney, thank you very much for calling. What's on your mind, Rooney?
Good evening, Doc. The thing that jumped out at me, other than the cover, great picture on the front, but my friend in Gibsonia, Pennsylvania, had it sitting on the dashboard of his car, and I picked it up and looked into this development of Cato the Elder and how he observed that the Romans didn't care about what their legions were doing in foreign lands. All they wanted to know was, you know, what was the price of bread today? Did the price go up?
Yes.
Did taxes go up? And I had to think of how this relates to the Poles. It's funny you mentioned that this book of yours is a guidebook to the Poles, because what I see the Poles as is the Augean stables that Hercules was challenged to clean out as his labor number five. And we're not cleaning out the Augean stables, which are the voting polls. And for that reason, we are not...
Wait, hold on. No, I'm following your metaphor, but what do you mean by cleaning out? You mean changing the nature of how we vote at all? Because you mean there are so many people voting who aren't even qualified to vote, like illegal aliens, et cetera? Is that what you mean?
Yes, the Augean stables had a stench unlike any other, and that's why Hercules was challenged to clean them. And these polls we have a stench now. For example, today we talked about early voting.
Yep.
And early voting has made this election over before it starts. In other words, 2 million ballots are handled privately by people behind the scenes. In a single city in our country, 2 million ballots are filled out without the light of day shining on the voting process, at least on
right. And they're blocking military ballots at the same time. The Democrats are going to steal the election. And I've been warning people not to count their to have their victory party so fast. Remember who's running this country. The Chicago mob is running this country. They brought all of the gutter gang tactics that put Obama into office. And believe me, if you think they're finished, you're wrong.
At last, somebody with the common sense and the vision to know that there isn't going to be any gain on November 2nd because we...
Well, I didn't say there's going to be no gain. I didn't say that. But I don't think there's going to be the 55 seats lost that are being projected by some of the best pollsters, because they're not including the outright stealing of the election by the gang that put Obama in power to begin with.
I agree. Now, and I might have misspoken there. I'm from Connecticut, you know, and we have a...
I'm sorry. You're more polite than I am. Pardon me.
Yeah, well, I didn't mean to say no gains. I agree with you. There will be some gains, but nothing on the order of what these people are talking about. And
no, I do not expect a 55-seat gain. Me, I'm thinking 15 to 20. And the reason I say it is not because the popular sentiment wouldn't be to throw 100 Democrats out. It's because the gang that put Obama in power is going to steal the election.
Well, they did before, and that was a training ground for them in that 2008 election, and they perfected this system. And why do you think he's talking to these universities? And he's talking, I mean, the words that he uses, all you have to do is realize what they mean. I want you to do the same thing you did last time, and that was to take 327 affiliated organizations of Acorn and steal through the most blatant fraud, knowing that each voting place was controlled by a Democrat, socialist, communist, and that the votes are counted from computers and people who were extremely biased, and nobody has oversight. So we got to clean out the
state. That's right. Well, let's look at the computer voting. Let's start with that. Who runs those programs? Who owns them? Probably the same companies that run the parimutuel betting around the country. And you know and I know that they're rigged.
Of course.
And so what's the hope then? You know, the hope, I'm afraid to say to you, I saw during the 2000 election, I think it was the Gore-Bush campaign. You remember what went on in Florida when the Cubans in white shirts went into the... Do you remember that particular scene scenes that were appearing on television? The Democrats had sent armies of cowardly punk lawyers out of New York City to go to the polling booths in Florida. The Republicans countered with muscular young Cuban men in white shirts and ties. Do you remember that scene of the screaming cowards running out of the voting booths? The lawyers thought that they could run all over everybody with their big mouths from NYU. Do you remember what happened when the Cubans showed up, pounding on the glass, demanding to see what was going on in there? You remember that? That's exactly what needs to happen again for us to save this country from this gang, because they're going to send the same lawyers out from New York University to steal the election.
Well, there's another scene, Doc, that comes to mind, and that is the Philadelphia scene from the 2008 election, where the Black Panthers stood in combat fatigues with batons and guarded the polls and told certain people to keep moving, that they weren't welcome in the polls. I mean, you're
That's
talking
right.
about...
That was the beginning of Obama's private army, his SA. That's right, a goon squad, the early days. The Justice Department should have pursued that, but they've been burying that case, as you well know. It's a very famous story.
Well, it's just a shame that the populace is so dumbed down, so naive about this topic, and on November 2nd, we're going to be sadly disappointed.
Yes. No, we are. I agree with... Look, I'm having an election night party for only 50 friends somewhere. I'm not going to mention where, because that's not the point. I'm not selling it. The TVs will be running. It'll be beer and wine and the hors d'oeuvre thing in a lockdown location. But I know we are going to see one stolen election after another. I'm not going there with the balloons ready to go. I know we're going to come and watch in astonishment as they steal one district after another.
Well, I did receive your invitation, and I look forward to receiving your book.
You received the invitation to my party?
Yes.
But I didn't send it out yet.
Well, I saw the draft. They asked me to proofread it, actually.
What? Come on, you're pulling my leg.
No, I have a crack proofreading staff.
No, come on. Are you pulling my leg? Because I didn't draft an invitation yet.
Of course I'm pulling your leg. You were born at night.
You see, you're one step ahead of me. I'm a little tired from the weekend. A lot of driving, you know, hundreds of miles on a highway. After a while, it gets to your mind. You're good-natured. Thanks for tricking me. Stay in the line. Another copy of Trickle Up Poverty is on the way to you. Whew, that was close. Anyway, really, I don't know that you're going to get the 50 seats or 51 that Rasmussen is projecting, because he's projecting, I believe, based upon likely voters, right? But he cannot correct in those projections for the rigging. You can't project that in a stable poll. Pollsters base it upon likely voters, so they call them up. So say it's 1,050 likely voters, okay? And they know how to correct. You know, the computer programs are good at that. But you can't correct for corruption or stolen elections. You can't correct for that in any of your polling. So we have a real problem on our hands, and I wouldn't count my blessings yet before it's over, you know. Albany, New York, WGY country. Tom, welcome to the program. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I received
yes, sir.
Your book. I talked to you last week. I've received your book today, and I have been reading it diligently since. I haven't put it down. It is amazing, absolutely amazing. Between the power corrupts and absolute power corrupts, absolutely, where you talk about Nancy Pelosi, which is just endemic of the...
Nancy Pelosi using Air Force jets for her personal Air Force is a crime. And if it was a Republican, he would be in jail right now. He would have been stripped of the speakership, and he would be in prison. If it was a Republican speaker of that, let's say it was Newt Gingrich as Speaker of the House, who used Air Force jets for himself and his family 85 times, do you think he would not be in prison?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. The media would.
So how does she get away with it? The answer is because we don't have a Justice Department. We have an Injustice Department.
Just us with the power.
Yeah, power corrupts. Absolute power corrupts. Absolutely. So the liberal Democrats are the most corrupt group that have ever seized power in this country. Thank you very much for calling. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Okay, I got to take this from another angle for you. I'm playing the spacey music for a reason. I'm driving in the car up and down in the mountains with my friend, who's a physicist, Dr. Sarfati, Jack Sarfati. You say physicist, you think like a distinguished professor. He's better than a distinguished professor. He's my friend. But he's a very, very intelligent, interesting guy. We talk a lot about a lot of things. And he was astonished at my ability to see things before they happen. And he loves my book. He loves me. We know each other for many years. And something happened in the car that was astonishing, which I'm not going to divulge. It's a personal thing because he got home and emailed me. He said, just what you mentioned about a long-lost family member who I haven't heard from in years. We were talking about an uncle of his who was a hero in World War II, who a guy from Brooklyn. Listen to this story. I got to tell you the whole story. His uncle was a guy from Brooklyn. And he was like a dancer who was about to go to Hollywood. He was offered a role in Hollywood. But his father said to him, this is just before World War II, go into the reserve so you can get it over with and then go to Hollywood to pick up your movie career. He goes into the reserves. He has a week to go. The Japanese bomb Pearl Harbor. He's one of the first boats sent over to the Pacific Islands. And he had been harassed to death by the Marine Corps. I think the Marines. I'm not sure. Army. And they picked on him because he was Jewish. They made him do the worst work, peeling potatoes, cleaning latrines. But he never gave in. He didn't cry and whine and go to the – he did it, whatever they said. They made him dig ditches when the other guys would laugh at him. As a result, he was in the first wave of one of the actions on one of the beaches where 90% of the men were killed. And he said he survived primarily because the sergeants were so mean to him and he was in such great physical shape because of the digging and the hard work. He was lean and mean and really tough. Now, that was just the beginning of the conversation. He then became the most popular man on patrols in the jungles of the South Pacific, his uncle, because he had almost a fifth sense, or a sixth sense, rather, where he could detect the Japanese sniper in the trees before anybody else. Now, remember, this is a guy from Brooklyn, this guy, his uncle. And he's now walking with some of these tough hunters, these kids who have been hunting in Georgia. They were good guys, very tough guys. But they used this kid from Brooklyn as the lead because he can see and hear things that they couldn't see and hear. He knew where the snipers were. Nobody knew how he could do it. He was able to conceive of things that they couldn't, or see and hear things. And eventually wound up working with the American Indian code talkers because he was on their wavelength in terms of ability to scout and whatnot. So anyway, the guy survives World War II. He's injured, this and that. So I'm in the car with him and I bring it up. My friend gets home and he sends me an email. He says, you brought up something about it. And we got an email from a relative. How did you know this? Why did you bring it up? Why did you bring this up? In the same car ride, out of nowhere, I bring up Ira Einhorn and his murder of his girlfriend in Philadelphia decades ago. Out of nowhere, I brought it up and start talking about it. Jack said, I knew him, this and that. And little we know, we get home and we read the first published interview from Philadelphia with Ira Einhorn, the murderer, the man who killed his girlfriend and put her into a trunk, Holly Maddox, I remembered her name. He said, how did you come up with these things? I said, sometimes my mind goes into a wavelength where I can predict the future, and I don't know how it happens. These are on a minor scale. I mean, this is not something that you write home about what I'm telling you. I'm giving you minor examples. So I said to Jack, I said, who are the leading scientists on the precognitive reality issue, meaning people who can't, you know, okay, let's put it in common terms, premonitions. You ever have a premonition and it comes true? We all do. But there are some people who can do it on a regular basis. So I said, in the world of physics, physical sciences, who are the best minds in the area of precognitive reality? Well, he said there are several, and he gives me a list, and he says he's the leading living theoretician in that field. And I can believe that, and his new book will be out in a while, and we'll have him on for that. But Discover Magazine recently wrote an article called Back from the Future, in which a series of experiments show that measurements performed in the future can influence the present. And they ask, does that mean the universe has a destiny? And the and they talk about it from that way, Back to the Future, and the rules, the real rules of time travelers. Does the universe have a destiny? It's all about Back from the Future. You follow what I'm saying to you? Am I making any sense? Measurements performed in the future can influence the present. So what does it have to do with the elections? I said to my friend Jack, I said, in terms of politics, in terms of international politics in particular, I have never been wrong. I have always been able to not so much predict what would happen as so much as deduct what would happen. And that is because I have a classically trained mind, classically trained education in the hard sciences. I was also trained by one of the finest Aristotelian minds of our time, who no one ever heard of, called my father. The man went to a few years of high school, had no formal education, but he had a rock-solid mind, and he trained me rigorously to think for myself. He would never answer a direct question on issues that required thinking. I, 3-4 years old, I'd walk with him and say, Dad, can you tell me blah, blah, blah? He'd say, well, think about it. And he'd teach me how to think. Now, I want you to compare that to the children today who are taught to not think. The children today are taught to answer what they have been told to say. These are the children who Obama is talking to now in the colleges, many of whom are drugged, many of whom are on psychedelic drugs given to them by their quack physicians and or toxic psychoactive drugs that they're using on a regular basis, whether it be the New Age marijuana or whatever. They're brainwashed millions who put this character and the charade artist in power. So I have predictions about Obama that I lay out in Trickle Up Poverty, which America is buzzing about. Don't you get what I'm saying to you?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, part two today. Part two. Elections are in 2 weeks from tomorrow. Some of the outcome has already been determined by the so-called voting that's been going on in the country. And we ended the last hour talking about premonitions that I have. In science, it is called remote viewing. I call it premonitions. I'm more from another world. And so when I talk about how Obama is impoverishing the middle class or erasing our border with Mexico, or how he is defunding the military and putting our troops in harm's way, how he is going to line the pockets of his Wall Street buddies, how he has and will continue to propagandize the media, I am in essence giving you not so much premonitions or remote viewing. I'm giving you what I consider to be reasonable conclusions or deductions based upon the data or the evidence. How else do you explain, you know, a lot of books come out. Yes, I'm going to talk about my book if you don't mind. I worked on it a long time. So if it bores you, I'm sorry. How else do you explain that tens of thousands of people have rushed out to buy the book and they're telling their friends about the book? Because they're finding stuff in it that's worth reading. And then they're going to the 30 pages of references saying, look, the guy, he may be a conservative, but look what he says about Obama. Look what he said. Look what he did. And this is the reference. I'm trying to save you from yourself and your own biases. I live in an allegedly a liberal area, but there's something interesting that I observed over the weekend as well. When I came back to the San Francisco area, I realized what was wrong here. It's not that it's filled with liberals. It's filled with what I defined as redneck liberals. No one's ever used that phrase so far as I know. You never heard the phrase redneck liberal, have you? Because you assume that the word redneck is associated with arch conservatives, which would be nice if it were true. But it isn't true. We have in the San Francisco Bay Area thousands upon thousands, tens of thousands of redneck liberals. They are people who should, on the face of it, agree with my politics, but they don't. And that is because they've been brainwashed. And they don't have any of the sophistication of liberals that you normally associate with liberals. They don't. They're not sophisticated. They don't have any of the nuances of the liberal that you would associate with a big city liberal. In essence, they are redneck liberals. And that's my dysfunction with the San Francisco Bay Area. But let's put aside my own biases. I don't really want to talk about redneck liberals and other peeves of my own. I want to talk about remote viewing or precognitive recognition or premonitions. What I see happening to America under Obama, you don't have to be a genius to see what he's done. Let's boil it down. Let's not make it so highfalutin. Obamacare is communism in plain English. Obamacare is communism in plain English. Socialism, I don't care what you want to call it. It's all the same thing. It's making someone pay for someone else's medical care. In fact, the someones who don't even deserve it are going to get it, many of whom are illegal aliens. They're here illegally, and I have to pay for their medical care. Now, liberals voted for Obama and Obamacare because they thought they'd get something for free. They thought they'd get more medical care. Little did the little old ladies who are grifting off the medical system realize that all of their visits to doctors would come to a crashing halt very soon. Little did they realize that the very system that they had so good under the Republicans for so long is going to come to a crashing halt under Obama. They're not going to get the same medical care. They're not going to get as much medical care. And they're going to pay for what they do get. They didn't understand it because the tricksters in the White House are very clever. And the tricksters in the White House are not through yet. They've just gotten started. And the tricksters in the White House are going to steal the election. And I am not, I'll use a funny word, sanguine about the predictions that the Repubs are going to win 55 seats or more. I suspect it may be closer to 15 or 20 because the gang that put this man in power are going to steal as many seats as they can. How do I know it? Because nothing is what it seems to be. Everything is shadows on the wall. You're not really seeing what's going on. You're seeing the shadows on the wall, and you think that those are the actors actually acting, but you're only seeing their shadows. What you're seeing is a light show. So Michelle Obama, for example, lectures you about health foods, gives a speech and says grow vegetables, tells you to eat apple slices and veggies, and then she goes out and eats cheeseburgers and fries on the road. Look at the picture of her on michaelsavage.com. From the Los Angeles Times, Michelle Obama downs cheeseburger and fries. There's nothing wrong with it, but she's not telling you what she really does any more than he's telling you who he really is. There's one little petty example. You understand what I'm saying to you? But the biggest story that I found is on the top of my website. Germans want Muslims to learn German. They fear an Islamist takeover. Miss Merkel, the president of Germany, or the chancellor of Germany, whatever they call it today, said the so-called multi-culti concept, where people would live side by side happily, did not work, and immigrants needed to do more to integrate, including learning German. This is coming out of Ms. Merkel, out of Germany. Wouldn't you love to hear an American president say that about the swamp that we are now living in? The lies, the Tower of Babel, the filth, the confusion, the ruined hospitals, the destroyed schools, the decimation of our social landscape by the architects who created multiculturalism. Wouldn't you love to hear it once from a leader saying that multiculturalism is a failure? It's time for the immigrants to learn English or get out of our country. Wouldn't you love to hear that? I would. Let me go to the callers now on the Savage Nation. Do we have the remote viewer caller? No. Gone? Oh, shame. All right, Boca Raton. James, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. From reading Trickle Up Poverty, I learned about communist Frank Marshall Davis, who was a mentor to Obama, and the FBI having files and files of intel on Davis. I didn't know how heavily affiliated Obama was with the Marxist communist revolutionaries in college. I learned that Obama's university school papers and grades are sealed off from the public. And I didn't know that Bill Ayers bombed the Pentagon.
I'm sorry, you didn't know what?
That Bill Ayers bombed the Pentagon.
Oh, his good friend in Chicago, his community activist friend. So in other words, our Marxist-Leninist president as I have established in Trickle Up Poverty, has been a lifetime Marxist. He was nursed on Marxism by Mr. Davis. Isn't that what you're saying?
Yes, sir.
Now, how does that lead you to vote next in 2 weeks from now?
Definitely not Democrat whatsoever.
Now, have you voted for Democrats in the past?
I'm sorry.
Have you voted for Democrats in the past?
No, I have not.
So how this book hasn't really changed your mind? So I've written it for, in other words, I'm preaching to the converted, right?
No, not necessarily. It has opened my mind in the way that I always viewed America as being very free, and now I fear that it won't be free because of the coming takeover of our freedom from the...
Okay, that's very sober. It's very sober. It's a sober reality. So that's your remote viewing. You have a remote view of the future in which you have a dim view of the future, in which you see an increased police state and fascist state brought about not by the right wing, but by the left wing. Isn't that really what you fear?
Yes, sir. Possibly both combined, but mainly...
A step ahead of Mike. At the end of the day, two sides of the same coin, far right, far left, two sides of the same coin of control. Let me send you another copy of the book. Give it away to a friend, whatever you want to do with it. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's go up to New York City. Eric, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Michael, you're the man. I mean, nobody else is dealing with the thing, the real problem. Everybody's talking about the Tea Party, talking about the election, but you're the only one who's giving the Republicans a strategy for winning. They should hire you as the person to develop a counter strategy. You're the man who can help them. I don't know
why.
You
mean my 37 points for a new America? But the point is, the Republicans hate me. The Republican Party wants nothing to do with me. That is because I am the Tea Party of the American radio airwaves. They want nothing to do with the Tea Party. They're afraid of the Tea Party. They're afraid of true conservatives. You know that.
Not just from the Tea Party. They're going to lose key seats. You're telling them what to do, and they should be listening.
Okay, so let's boil it down to 3 points that you think I wrote that should be done. Do you remember any of them off the bat? I don't want to put you on the spot. And just pull it out of your mind. Any of the things I said that stick in your mind?
Okay. Yeah, what you said to the listeners. You said they ought to be out there at the polling places dealing with the people who are going to be threatening people. They ought to be
You're saying an actual strategy for Election Day, which is that we should have the equivalent of the Cubans in the white shirts at every polling place to counter the Black Panthers with batons, for example, or the guys with the Coke bottle glasses from NYU who are threatening a lawsuit.
Yeah, they need to be out there.
Well, armies that we need? Where are the armies of American conservatives who are going to guard the polls from these dangerous factions? I don't know where they are, but I know you're getting a copy of Trickle Up Poverty. Thank you for the call. 1-800-449-8255. Let's go across the country now. Let us go straight across America. And let us go south to San Diego, where Rachel awaits us on the Savage Nation. Rachel, go ahead, please.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for taking my call. I really wanted to address, I'm a young mother of two, and I would consider myself a conservative, a new listener. And I really was just, I cannot believe that Obama is going after the young people, like you said, in the universities, but also with his faux town hall meeting that was aired on MTV. And he actually is directing the young college students who attended this meeting to go home and educate their parents because they do not know what they do. They're stuck in their ways, and that the young college people have to educate their parents to not vote Republican and go against...
Okay, now let's stop right there. What you're saying is very interesting. In the ex-Soviet Union, the young radical communist was told to go home and educate their parent to vote communist or else. And they were also told to report on their parents at a later stage of the regime, in the regime's history. They were told to report on their parents' activity if they weren't sufficiently, let us say, politically correct. Is that the bone-chilling reality of what you're fearing here with this man?
Oh, yes. I was absolutely floored floored when I heard this, because number one, yes, you want to have an open discussion with your children, but the fact that he would just sit there and manipulate the young adults to go home and actually educate their parents because they're so dumb that they don't know what they're doing, just basically floored me. And just to add to that, I wanted to make one comment. I live in San Diego, a fairly conservative area of San Diego, and I have a son who came home from second grade. I picked him up, and he asked me on the drive home, "Mommy, are we black or are we white?" And I asked him, "Why are you asking?"
I don't understand. Wait. How could he ask that question?
Well, it was just oblivious to the fact. I mean, we've never really had the discussion what color we are. We live in a multicultural society, I guess, by all accounts.
You mean the child didn't even know his own race?
No, I mean, he
Oh, I think what you're saying is you're shocked that they would even raise the question to make him talk about race, is what you're saying.
Because, and I asked him, "Why are you asking me that question?" He said, "Because I don't want to be white." And I
what?
Said, yeah, that's exactly.
He doesn't want to be white? They made him embarrassed to be white?
Yes, and I said, "Why not?" And he said, "Because I don't want to be the person who wouldn't let the lady ride on the bus."
Oh, my God. Oh, my God, this is heart-stopping radio, Rachel. But I'm, you know, in a way, I'm shocked. On another hand, it's a little theatrical because I've heard this before. The psychopaths on the left have been indoctrinating students for about 10 years now about a so-called question called whiteness and about the embarrassment of whiteness. This is all part of the brainwashing that has gone on inside the American university that is now reaching and seeping down to the first grade. Okay, so okay, maybe my next book should be Trickle Down Marxism. You got a copy of Trickle Up Poverty? Stay in the line. Someone will steal that one. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com. Be right back.
Savage.
Knocking on doors and making phone calls, talking to your friends and neighbors, if you do not give up hope, then I guarantee you that not only are we going to win this election, because this was never just about putting a president in the White House, it was about building a movement for change that lasted for a long time.
There it is. He just told you what he's all about. Building a movement for change that lasts a long time. You think he's given up? You think he's stopped? You think he's over? You think the Democrats are going to roll over? You think socialism is not on the move? You're out of your damn mind. Tory in Texas, you're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, I just want to say, although I'm an openly gay woman, I've been a supporter of the Tea Party, and I have been very influenced by you ever since September 2001.
And I don't know why you see, the one part of your sentence that doesn't make sense is when you said, although. Why would you say, although I'm an open gay woman, why would that matter to me?
Well, it doesn't really matter to you, but it matters to a lot of my gay, I wouldn't say friends.
Oh, okay, because they're all liberals, but there's not one mention of the word gay or homosexual in 110,000 words in Trickle Up Poverty, is there?
No, there's not, and forgive me for not completing the book yet. However, I have been ridiculed.
Tori, gay people should by nature be conservative. They have more to lose than any other group in America if they continue to play footsies with radical Islam. And, you know, I there's so much more that we could say to each other that needs to be said right now that I would invite you to stay over during the break, because I want the world to hear something about why most Democrats are liberal and why especially the rich gays don't understand the danger they're putting themselves in by supporting the radical leftist agenda with regard to radical Islam. That is my primary point.
Savage.
Homes that are occupied may see an ebb and flow in the price at a certain percentage level. But you're not going to see the collapse that you see when people talk about a bubble. And so those of us on our committee in particular will continue to push for home ownership.
I have always been critical of this effort to equate a decent home with home ownership. I think we should have been doing more to provide rental housing. My efforts have been to try and get affordable.
You're hearing
rental.
The lying, two-faced, phony Bonnie Frank, who should be in prison, in my opinion. Not only for this, but for many other things that he's been doing. He should be indicted and tried. And I hope during, if we do have the Republican sweep, that he is indicted and investigated for what he has done. The first soundbite was Bonnie Frank in 05, saying that those of us on our committee will particularly push for home ownership. In other words, he'll make you pay for homes for unqualified individuals. Then today in 2010, the double-talking, filthy liar says, I was very much in disagreement with this push into home ownership, and I think the federal government should not be artificially doing that. How do you people in Massachusetts do a thing like this? How do you elect people that are so such liars? Albany, New York, Jimmy, you're on the Savage Nation.
How does Obama, who professes to want to take everything from the rich and want to give it to the poor, surround himself with nothing but the rich, and then those rich that he surrounds himself with know that he wants to take everything from them, and they still support him?
Well, there's two answers to the question. One is the reason the rich support Obama is because they think that they can control him and bring about a shrinking of the middle class and a new Soviet America where there will be the ruling class and the peasants, of which they will be the ruling class, and he will be continue to be their friend, colleague, and puppet. What they don't understand is that Obama's smarter than they are, much like a certain Austrian was originally used by the Krupp Steel Corporation and other large manufacturers in Germany who thought that they could manipulate this charismatic young man who was running around Germany raising so much interest in politics, and they thought that they could put him in power, this young man from Austria, and eventually manipulate him. Little did they know that he was using them. They weren't using him. Does that answer your question in some regard?
Yeah. It's disgusting.
You got a free copy of Trickle Up Poverty, because I hope it doesn't happen. I have studied Hitler's rise from the time he was a mere corporal in World War I, and somewhat of a war hero, by the way, and how, when the National Socialists first emerged on the scene in Germany, which, remember, was a democracy during the Weimar Republic, how he was in bed with all the industrialists. The rich of the country loved him. The rich liked what they were hearing. The rich loved it. You didn't know that Hitler was a back-to-nature man, did you? Many of you don't even know. You're so ignorant of history. I can't blame you. I blame the education system. He was a vegetarian. He didn't drink. He was a back-to-nature movement guy. But more than that, he was anti-capitalist, so they thought. The socialists who were aligned with Hitler, the National Socialists, were against private property and ownership. But Hitler didn't go for that right away. As a matter of fact, it led to a big fight within the Nazi Party itself. And so there, soon after Hitler aggrandized a great deal of power to himself and established his dictatorship, his original thugs, his supporters, the brown shirts, and the Ernst Röhm, the street fighter, and he had a big fight because Ernst Röhm was a diehard socialist. And they fought. And he said to Hitler, how could you be doing business with all these capitalists when we are supposed to be such pure socialists? But Hitler was far smarter than Ernst Röhm. He knew that he continued to need the big capitalists to advance the Nazi agenda. And so he never outright attacked the big capitalists. He worked with them. So Ernst Röhm and the other diehard socialists in the SA, the brown shirts, rebelled. As a result, they were exterminated in the Night of the Long Knives, which you should study one day. When Hitler's SS lay in wait for the SA, who were in a male bacchanalia on a certain lake in Germany with each other. The SA, as you see, were oriented in that direction. Study it, it's historical. And the SA leadership were having fun with their boyfriends on a certain lake in Bavaria. The SS lay in wait for them, killed most of them, arrested some of the others, including Ernst Röhm, who was later executed. It's a fact of history. I'm not embroidering. I'm not inventing. I'm giving you a fact of history. What does it have to do with Obama? Everything and nothing. Everything, because it's quite telling to study how Hitler rose to power using, although he said he was a socialist, He used the capitalists to get to power. Okay? And his socialist buddies were very mad at him because he didn't impose his socialism fast enough, so he had them killed. But then, of course, after he had total power, there was another story, which we're not going to have to give you a whole history lesson right now. And I don't really cover this in my book. I touch on it, but it's irrelevant. What's relevant to this discussion is Obama's Marxist socialist roots and why I define him as not a socialist. That's baby talk. You've heard the word, hey, Obama's a socialist. It doesn't mean anything anymore. When I was talking about socialism in radio 10 years ago, nobody had used the word in talk radio that I know of. Nobody had used it. They didn't even know what the word meant. Then all of a sudden, they were all, oh, socialist, schmocialist. Well, there are quite a number of varieties of socialist. You have to define what you're talking about. This nation has been somewhat socialist since the 1960s. Okay? So what variety of it? How virulent is this socialism? I define Obama as a pan-Leninist. That's something you haven't heard about. The golfer doesn't know what the word means. If you say pan-Leninist to the golfer, he'd have to look it up because he hasn't seen it anywhere. If you said it to a wall banger, he would get embarrassed and angry and fire somebody. If you said it to the leprechaun, he propped the words pan-Leninist, the phrase pan-Leninist to understand it. And then you'll understand Obama when he says, we didn't do this just to elect a man. So I want you to play that whole soundbite now, and you'll understand what I mean when I say pan-Leninist if you listen to that soundbite again. Beowulf, please.
If you are out there knocking on doors and making phone calls, talking to your friends and neighbors, if you do not give up hope, then I guarantee you that not only are we going to win this election, because this was never just about putting a president in the White House. It was about building a movement for change that lasted for a long time. We will build
building a movement for change that lasts a long time. Now, does that definitively prove he's a pan-Leninist? Of course not. But he certainly gives away an intimation of what I am talking about. And the rest you have to, study to get to the bottom of it. So when you look at the adulation of one-third of the population that gave Hitler the power in Germany, and you hear what I just said? The adulation of one-third of the population that brought Hitler to power, and you look at the adulation of the one-third of the American population that brought Obama to power, you say, well, all right, that doesn't prove anything either, does it? You got to understand that most Germans did not even go along with the crude imagery of the early Nazi party. They didn't even like the anti-Semitism of the early Nazi movement at all. Most Germans were quite polite. They did not go along with the crude images that Hitler was putting out there. Nor were they likely to become involved in or approve of physical violence directed at individual Jews and their property. Did you understand any of this? It was a very small fringe in the Nazi movement that was anti-Semitic to this degree. What does it have to do with Obama? It's only a small fringe within the Obama inner circle. This small fringe of labor camps. I know the leftists. You don't. Many of you don't understand how the leftists think. So the radical university Lexist, most of them are maniacs. You think you hear electric cars, you hear Obamacare. These are just minor details to them. They would like to have a complete and total socialist revolution in America, where masses of people were taken out, put into re-education camps, worked to death, and then executed, along the lines of the Red Brigades in Cambodia, or the Red Communist Chinese in China. This is very serious business that we're talking about. You got to understand this. The misery that is felt by society today is directly related to the pacifism that is rampant in our military today. The internationalism that is rampant in our political class today. And the rot that is set in Washington. You understand what I'm saying to you? I don't have to go into a tirade right now to make my point. I don't have to do that at all. We know that the decayed old political system in America is cracking right now. We know that we have to build a new America, built on the fundamental values that built America. We know we have to build America based on the basis of achievement, strength, will, struggle, freeing the genius of the individual personality. But you don't hear any of this rhetoric coming from any of the politicians, do you? You hear it in crude form, but not really in the way I just put it to you. How can the strength of the nation be improved is the question. Do you think Obama can rescue the common strength of the nation? I don't. I think that he has ruined the nation in the 2 years he's been in power. And I believe the only thing that can save America will be to select the best Americans irrespective of their race or their sex or their sexual orientation based on their achievement, their strength, their will, their ability to struggle, their ability to work, so we can free the genius of the individual personality. That's what we need in America. And the only way we can do that in order to increase the material value of the individual is to increase the moral and spiritual value of the individual first. The moral and the spiritual value of the individual has almost died in this country. Has almost died in this country. That is why we have such social misery, such anxiety, and such division in this country. We have an ineptitude amongst the politicians that is paramount to the collapse of the American of the America that we know. Tax reductions, we have to talk about that. We have to talk about taxes, taxes, taxes. Right now we have about the most unfair tax system in the world. How is it that we don't have a flat tax, which I call for again? I didn't originate the idea in trickle-up poverty. Why should a man who earns more pay more and higher a rate of taxes? Let's say we all pay a flat tax of 15%. Why should the man who makes $50,000 not pay 15% of $50,000, the same way a man who makes $1 million pay 15% of $1 million? Why should you be punished for your success? Why is that? Because we're already a socialist nation. The tax system we have is already a socialist tax system. They punish success. But that's not good enough for the pan-Leninists, is it? No, they argue that you should be taxed more. The more you make, the higher the rate of taxes, they say. It's not enough that you pay the majority of taxes. They say you should pay almost all of your income because you had good parents. Now, I'm leading up to something that it's going to take me a whole day to describe tomorrow. I saw an article this morning in the New Republic, a left-wing rag, arguing moral arguments for soaking the rich. And I don't know whether it was meant, you know, tongue-in-cheek or whatever. But they're saying that we must tax the rich and soak them, and they give arguments for it. And they say that the counter-argument is that it's the work ethic that made you rich. They say that many people who have a lot of money say that they earned it. But then they say this argument suffers from two key flaws. And they say one is that it fails to account for the power of luck. Now listen to this left-wing stupidity. The man writes, almost by definition, people who are successful have benefited from some measure of good fortune. Now, let me stop right there. For 30 years, I was denied entry into the university by these communists because I was a white male. But I never gave up. I kept fighting and fighting and fighting. I was rejected by hundreds of universities so they could hire unqualified minorities and unqualified women. Anybody but a white male would be hired. But I never gave up. Instead, I found a new career in radio 16 years ago because I wouldn't give up. Would you say that was a power of luck, my not giving up, or something else? And yet this jealous, I have a word for him which I can't use on the air. If I was driving in a car with you, I'll tell you what I think of this ass who wrote this argument, moral arguments for soaking the rich. One is that it fails to account for the power of luck, they're saying. In other words, if you made it in this country, you're all lucky. And then they say, this was good fortune. And then wait, here's the killer. Or this good luck can take the form of more subtle but still important assets for moving forward in life like good health or loving parents. I said, are you kidding me? They're now saying that loving parents is something negative? That you should be penalized if your parents sacrificed their id to put you through school or help you to go through school? Or they didn't go out and snort cocaine? Or they didn't go to a nightclub till 4 in the morning? They stayed home and stayed married for your sake? You had loving parents who raised you properly because they were raised morally? And that now is a target for the radical left. They even attack your good health, and they say that's an asset, that's an aspect of luck. Well, in some regard, good health is luck. But in most cases, good health is a result of control, self-control. Again, they want to punish you for being successful. And they're arguing now, if you have good health, you should be punished. If you had good parents, you should be punished. My friends, do you have any idea what we are dealing with now? The illness of liberalism has now metastasized to the level of total insanity. I'll be back to continue my thesis.
Savage.
So Obama is agitated, he is motivated, and he is on the move. And don't underestimate him. Don't underestimate the people who put this unknown man in power. They have planned thousands and thousands of meetings for the last 2 weeks of the campaign. I do not think the Tea Party nor the Republicans have anything to match. I believe that their agitation right now is further evidence of their desire to steal the election, or to put it in the terms of the socialist movement itself, by any means possible, or by all means possible, by any means necessary. They will do anything, including stealing, outright stealing the election, voter intimidation. And so when you read polls who say that they're going to lose, the Republicans are going to gain 50, or the Democrats will lose 55 seats, I say not so fast. Oh, yeah, from the pollster's mouth to God's ear. But it doesn't work that way, because they cannot account in the statistical analysis for ballot stuffing and outright fraud. And therefore, so if you poll 1,000 or 1,500 likely voters, and they say that they're going to vote Republican instead of Democrat, of course you're going to get results which say they're liable to lose 55 seats. But if you then inject into that calculus ballot stuffing, not counting ballots, voter intimidation, et cetera, and so on, my predictions are closer to 20 seats. I hope I'm wrong. I'm a pessimist. I always have been. Since childhood, I've always seen my pessimism to be proven to be true. I have a gloomy view of what's coming, to be frank with you. So again, the energy and drive of the communist front in this country is at a fever pitch. Listen to Obama's voice to hear what I'm saying. It's almost clear in his voice. Listen to it again.
If you are out there knocking on doors and making phone calls, talking to your friends and neighbors, if you do not give up hope, then I guarantee you that not only are we going to win this election, because this was never just about putting a president in the White House. It was about building a movement for change that lasted for a long time. We will build a movement for change that will last 10 years from now and 20 years from now, and we will grow this economy and restore the middle
class. So he sees a 20-year Reich. Obama is now projecting a 20-year Reich. He's a young man. And, of course, if he wins this one, he'll steal the 2012, and then they'll eliminate term limits, and he could be president for life. Now, I've studied speakers and actors and politicians for most of my adult life, because, after all, I'm in the talk radio field. And as all politicians are, the good ones, he's a consummate actor. And you have to listen to the stage-managed speech that you just heard. The choice of colorful phrases, the gestures and body language, which you can't see. His highly expressive speech just now, with staccato bursts of sentences followed by well-timed rallentando to expose the emphasis of a key point. This is classic. This is classic rhetoric, and he is involved in it. Be wary, my friends. It's only just begun.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
today's show is amazing. We're talking about the insanity of the left. And, I mean, you think I'm just saying it for rhetoric. They call us, we're crazy. We say they're crazy. Well, let me ask you something. I found an article today in a leftist publication, a major mainstream leftist publication, which says that there's a good argument for soaking the rich or taxing the rich. Soaking the rich is what he said. And it's in the New Republic, which, of course, is a left-wing rag. And the lunatic actually argues that the reason you should soak the rich is because they had good parents and a good upbringing. And they said that because the rich often had the benefit of good parents who raised them well, they should therefore have their taxes greatly increased. So they want to now punish good parenting, taxing it at a higher level. So by this logic, bad parents should be given a tax credit, which, by the way, they're already given. And I'm asking you, as a parent, do you feel the Obama administration is helping or hindering your efforts to raise your children? Do you feel any interference in the schools, for example, and how your children are being taught? We also talked about the Fort Hood massacre by the major Nidal Hassan, the Muslim, who went on a shooting rampage and shot unarmed soldiers, including a pregnant woman, and killed them all. The media is now reporting that the Fort Hood gunman did not target anyone in particular. That's right. The Associated Insanity, an AP, said that soldier, Fort Hood gunman, did not target anyone. When did you first realize that the media would try to betray and destroy the nation and give aid and comfort to the Muslim enemies at any cost? Now, what is the worst example you've ever seen of a news headline that completely twists the actual meaning of a news story? This is probably as good an example as any, you know. Today also we found out that Barney Frank would keep pushing for home ownership for the poor, and then he lied years later. Well, you got to see this sound. You can't believe this one. Today we've got some top-flight sound, including Michael Savage on my new book, Trick. Former Surgeon General Jocelyn Elders saying we should legalize marijuana because it's not toxic, which is a lie, by the way. Marijuana is very toxic. We have President Obama, whose poll numbers are in the garbage, stumping for Governor Deval Patrick in Massachusetts, whose numbers are in the garbage. We have President Obama on the campaign trail in Columbus, Ohio. Nancy Pelosi refusing to debate, saying she has better things to do than to debate. And Senator Harry Reid saying Obama is like the Chilean miners. I don't get that one. Well, Reid says when Obama took office, he found himself in a hole so deep he couldn't see the outside world. It was like the Chilean miners, but he being the man he is rolled up his sleeves and said, I'm going to get us out of this hole. Is he crazy? It was the taxpayers who got us out of the hole, not Obama. Again, wherever you turn, more lies. Not lies, lies, and lies. Bonnie Frank told us in 2005 how those on his committee would keep pushing for home ownership.
Homes that are occupied may see an ebb and flow in the price at a certain percentage level, but you're not going to see the collapse that you see when people talk about a bubble. And so those of us on our committee in particular will continue to push for home ownership.
But in 2010,
I have always been critical of this effort to equate a decent home with home ownership.
Can you believe this?
I think we should have been doing more to provide rental housing. My efforts have been to try and get affordable rental housing. I was very much in disagreement with this push into home ownership, and I think the federal government should not be artificially doing that.
Oh, he's such a two-faced liar. And here's the continuing saga of Obama the campaigner.
If you are out there knocking on doors and making phone calls, talking to your friends and neighbors, if you do not give up hope, then I guarantee you that not only are we going to win this election, because this was never just about putting a president in the White House. It was about building a movement for change
that
lasted.
This was all about putting Barack Hussein Obama and his Marxist agenda into the White House, and he shouldn't try to say otherwise.
Building a movement for change that lasted for a long time. We will build a movement for change.
Movement for change. Yes, indeed.
And 20 years from now.
So much so that it's going to change in November. But not how he wants it.
The middle class to its rightful place. And once again, the American dream will be alive and well.
But it's hard, Obama says.
Now, we're not just advocating change. We're not just
You work so hard on Obamacare that no one wanted. Well done, Mr. President.
We're grinding it out. Sometimes
you work so hard on Obamacare that no one wanted. Well done, Mr. President. Ushering in communist-style medical care. Now listen to our queen on high, Nancy Pelosi, saying that she has better things to do than debate her congressional opponent.
Would you be open to debating your Republican opponent, John Dennis, in San Francisco?
Let me tell you what my priorities are.
Okay.
My priorities are to elect a Democratic Congress. In order to do that, it's essential for me. Time is money for me. Is to move.
She says time is money? Wait. Time is money? You wanting to retain the speakership is going to cost us all money as you fly high, no doubt, in military aircraft.
Is to move around this country to amass the resources to put my candidates on TV. Whether I get a bigger majority in my district or not is not the point. What is important,
if it was a Republican, he'd be in the slammer.
In the Congress of the United States, and that's how I choose to use my TV.
What arrogance. Now, here's Harry Reid comparing Obama to the Chilean miners. I have no idea what he's talking about. Listen to this.
When Barack Obama was elected president, he found himself in a hole so deep that he couldn't see the outside world. It was like the Chilean miners.
No wonder Obama has no idea
but
what he's doing.
Being the man that he is, rolled up his sleeves and said, I'm going to get us out of this hole.
At least the miners got out after 69 days. But Barack Obama's been digging a deeper hole for nearly 2 years, and there's still no sign that he's hit bottom. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It's no secret we're going through one of the worst economic crises the nation has seen in decades. It's no secret that Craig Smith, the CEO of Swiss America, one of my primary sponsors, has been warning us of the collapse of the dollar. He joins us now with an update on where he thinks the economy is going. Craig Smith, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Thanks, Michael. You know, as you know, gold is up once again. We're now hitting the 1370, 1375 area, which is unbelievable. And you and I have talked about this before, Michael, and I think you cover it brilliantly in your new book, Trickle Up Poverty. And that is that the Fed is more than likely, matter of fact, I think it's for sure now, going to increase its targets on inflation and actually hope that the fear of inflation will cause people to go out and spend money. You have to keep in mind, people are not buying houses, not buying cars. Our economy is slowing because most people believe that prices are going to come down further. And so I really believe that the Fed now, and I'm not alone in this, it was all over Bloomberg the other day, is going to target inflation, meaning they want inflation to run higher in hopes to stimulate the economy and ultimately use inflation to monetize the debt. Now, keep in mind, Michael, a very similar strategy was employed by the Germans in 1920. Most people forget about history.
Why do you say that?
Right after World War I, Germany had a huge amount of debt, war reparations, and so they embarked on inflation. They just started printing money, very similar to what Mr. Bernanke is doing. And in the first 18 months, it went very, very well. People forget that in Germany, unemployment was virtually zero. Their factories were humming. Production was up. Their stock market was up. Everything looked like it was the most brilliant strategy you could ever employ. That was right up until 1923, Michael, when all hell broke loose as a direct result of flooding the market with billions and billions and trillions of German marks. Everybody's heard the stories about how you'd have to take a wheelbarrow full of marks in to buy a loaf of bread, and people would throw the money out of the wheelbarrow and steal the wheelbarrow because that was worth more than the marks that were in it.
Right, right, right.
And I covered this exact information in my new book, Crashing the Dollar, because it's so apparent to everybody what's happening. Look, the Federal Reserve, Michael, over the last 12 years has more than tripled their balance sheet. They've moved it from $600 billion to well over $2 trillion, and that doesn't even count the next round of quantitative easing that could be another $1.7 trillion. The numbers are just astronomical. And yet you see all this printing of money, and we see that Treasury bills are signaling deflation, and yet gold and the dollar and the foreign exchange markets are signaling inflation. So you got to ask yourself, who has it right? Well, in my opinion, I think it's pretty clear right now that you cannot see gold make all new highs every single day of the week and see the U.S. dollar continue to drop in value. It's lost 12% since June of this year alone, and not see that inflation is on its way.
Well, sure, okay.
And I think most economists would say right now that the treasury holders, the people that hold treasury bills, that is, believe that no matter how much money the Fed creates, no matter how much money they print, that the U.S. dollar will never lose value. Michael, they couldn't be more wrong about anything they've ever thought. The reason why people are in treasuries today getting a measly 2.4% return on their money is because people are scared to death about what lays around the turns in this economy with Mr. Obama and his mistaken monetary policies in this economy. Bernanke is prepared. That's why they call him Helicopter Ben, Michael. You know that's his famous title. He said he'd throw money out of helicopters if he had to stimulate the economy. Well, Bernanke is prepared to print money until inflation has thoroughly gripped our system. Now, a lot of people that are in bonds, they think, well, Mr. Bernanke's got it under control. Why, you know, he'll be able to hold down interest rates for an extended period of time, and he'll be able to withdraw all this extra money from the economy to keep inflation from running rampant.
That's crazy.
These people are seriously misguided, Michael, if they have even the least little knowledge of how economics work.
True.
That's why I am convinced, Michael, that Mr. Bernanke will not stop these printing presses until inflation is engulfing our nation. And we saw this happen in 1979-80 under the direction of Arthur Burns, head of the Federal Reserve back in the 70s. Think about it. He doubled the balance sheet and caused gold to quadruple overnight. We're seeing a tripling now, and maybe even a quadrupling of the balance sheet, and so we know what's going to happen. But here's the big problem, Michael, and most people are not talking about this in the press in America. They're talking about it in Asia. They're talking about it in Europe, but they're not talking about it in America, with the exception of Michael Savage, who's telling people the truth about this economy, and that is this. Inflation, mild inflation, or even hyperinflation, which I believe could be a real possibility, and I'm not alone in that thinking anymore, never really affects the super wealthy of a society. And quite frankly, the impoverished in our society really have nothing to lose. Every single time, if you look at history, Michael, inflationary periods and hyperinflation literally wipes out the middle class.
Well, I've been saying that for years on the Savage Nation.
And that's my concern. People forget that what happened in Germany after that 18 months of prosperity and looked like happy days were here again, the middle class was virtually wiped out. And it set the scene for a madman like Adolf Hitler to come in and blame everything on a group of people and start what was the most horrific part of world history, and that was the Holocaust. Now, am I saying that same thing could happen in America? I hope not. I hope the American people are more educated and more involved and more knowledgeable than the people of Germany. And thanks to programs like this, they are. But make no mistake about this, Michael. Inflation will wipe out the middle class. American middle class will have to spend every dollar they have to stay alive as the cost of living increases every single day in America.
Exactly.
That's why I'm glad that people are reading Trickle Up Poverty. That's why when my book comes out in a week or so, I hope they read Crashing the Dollar, because this is not rocket science anymore, Michael. This is very simple. I know you, being an educated man with multiple PhDs, you understand it because you have the knowledge, but you also have common sense, Michael, and you see the handwriting on the wall. You know what's getting ready to happen. And so I would just encourage every listener of the Savage Nation to stay informed. Make sure that you've diversified your portfolio. Make sure that you have some money in stocks and bonds and real estate and cash and gold and treasuries. You should be well diversified. But make no mistake about it, we are headed into an inflationary period. We saw it in 79 and 80. We saw it in 1962 through 68. We will see it in 2011 through 2015.
Really?
I am thoroughly convinced, Michael, that we are headed for a hyperinflationary depression. I outline why I believe this in my book. And people think, oh, a hyperinflationary, people will be standing in bread lines. People forget. Germany in 1923 went through this. They survived it, and they're one of the strongest economies in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
America will survive this, but the American middle class, once again, will take it on the chin. And my hope is that if people read Trickle Up Poverty and my new book, Crashing the Dollar, they will be prepared to not allow a runaway rogue government steal the wealth from the middle class. And I'll close with this, Michael. We've heard that if we roll back the Bush tax cuts that for the rich, why, my goodness, we'll generate $700 billion in additional income to the Treasury.
Yeah.
What the government is not telling us is that if we roll back the middle class tax cuts, we generate $2.2 trillion. The wealth of the nation is in the middle class. These rascals in Washington need it to cover the mistakes that they've made. And my hope is that we can protect the middle class against what will be the wholesale theft of a government directly out of the people's piggy banks.
Thanks for the report, Craig.
Thanks, Michael, for all that you're doing to bring this information to the American people. You can read more on my website at SwissAmerica.com. And once again, it's a pleasure to have been part of the Savage Nation today.
That was Craig Smith, CEO of Swiss America, one of the fabulous sponsors of the Savage Nation, warning us about the upcoming inflation that he sees coming down. Obama's economic plan is creating a mountain of debt, just as I warn you in my bestseller, Trickle Up Poverty. Hey, Savage Nation, this is Michael with an urgent message about the economy. Listen, there's been a lot of talk about the dangers of inflation, of deflation, of a double-dip recession, even the possibility of a depression. We now have mainstream economists warning that our whole economy, our liberty, on the brink of collapse. I think most people are completely confused by it all, but I've discovered a report that helped me understand what's about to happen. It's entitled Spiraling into a Greater Depression. I want you to get your free copy now. How? By calling 1-800-289-2646, 1-800-289-2646, or online at libertyisgolden.com. Visit libertyisgolden.com. I repeat, the answers to this crisis are all covered in this free report, Spiraling into a Greater Depression. And as a bonus, I'm going to include a free pocket constitution, which I think every American should reread before the November election. Call now, 800-289-2646, 1-800-289-2646, or visit libertyisgolden.com. Libertyisgolden.com. It's a message from me to you. Get it.
Call Michael now at 1-800-449-8255.
Savage.
Savage. I think this country has too many holidays for the children. They have this extended winter haven holiday so they can smoke more dope and do nothing with themselves. Then they're here a week, 4 days, they're back to school already, they're off today for another holiday. And what are they actually teaching them in school? The kids come out of college, they can't even add without a computer. They come out of college, they can't compose a sentence that is grammatically correct. I mean like he said, like I mean she said.
Michael Savage, now more than ever.
The jerks at ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, and the other places. And I will tell you that that's why I'm the outsider, which is very interesting. It's not so much what I say or how I say it. It's that I say it at all. They don't even understand that they should get mad at Osama bin Laden. They don't even understand when I call the president of Iran the Hitler of our time, I'm 100% right. This is Michael Savage. I want you to know that freedom of speech is not free. Believe me, courageous radio stations like this one want your advertising dollars to pay their bills and be able to bring you my show and all the others you've come to depend on for the real truth. Talk radio in many ways is America's immune system, but it needs your booster shot. If you're a business, you need to put your money where your heart is. Advertise on this station. And here's the good news. According to Talkers Magazine, ads airing on talk stations like this one generate 2 to 3 times the response from customers than other radio formats would generate. Why? Because talk radio listeners support with their dollars the advertisers that support the radio shows that they love. If you're a business, any kind of business, I don't care if you're a roofer, a plumber, advertise on this station. If you're a listener, do business with the businesses that advertise on my show and others on this station. For more information on how you can buy ads on this station or my show, call 877-474-6605. Write it down, 877-474-6605.
Can you imagine a world without children? A world where children don't play, or dream, or imagine.
At St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, we're working every day to find cures for diseases that strike down children. Because we can't imagine a world without children. Can you?
St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Call 1-800-931-0800 or log on to stjude.org.
Do you want to experience the full impact of the Michael Savage Show? Become a premium member and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcasts. Now you can take the Michael Savage Show anywhere and listen whenever and wherever you want. Get hooked up with the Michael Savage Show today. Go to www.talkradionetwork.com. That's talkradionetwork.com. Click on Savage's picture and sign up now. Savage.
The best network marketers in the world all desire three things from their new MLM opportunity. Products that dial into an untapped global phenomenon, to call on their MLM talents and get the good life fast, and to join early so they can quickly enjoy their dreams. Only top MLM professionals can join our new company now. Before we launch, we need top network marketers who can optimize the leads from our radio campaign to an audience of over 30 million. If you are a proven MLM professional who has earned six figures and achieved top ranks in other MLM companies, act now. Send a text message to 74499 and type MLM in the body of the message. These elite positions will go fast. Send a text message to 74499 and type MLM in the body of the message. Again, send a text to 74499 and type MLM in the message. Message and data rates may apply.
I want to focus on the main thing I read today on the New Republic's crazed article with moral arguments for soaking the rich. And they try to say that wealthy people owe a great debt to society. And they're basing this on the insanity of the left, saying that the proverbial self-made man is not exactly self-made. They say he or she is benefiting from the accomplishments of past generations, not to mention the support of public institutions like the National Science Foundation and services like schools, which foster innovation and lead to greater productivity. Now, wait a minute. I'm a self-made man. I'm benefiting from the accomplishments of past generations. You mean they're the ones who get up every morning and prepare the show for 10 hours a day and are still working when they could have retired? It's insanity. The whole thing is madness. So therefore, if you look at this stuff, they want to punish the rich because they're communists. That's who the left is today, communists. Even as Obama desperately, desperately tries to keep regular Americans from deserting the Demon Cat Party, his intellectual lackeys continue pushing the same Marxist lines they've been spewing for the last 20 years. An article in the New Republic appeared arguing that the rich should be taxed for moral reasons. This lunatic argues that rich people are only rich because of luck. Luck? How about my 25 years of bad luck? Who paid me for that when the ACLU denied me a job because I was a white male? He says this can take the form of access to technology, good schools, or having loving parents. So not only do the Marxist intellectual apparatchiks of the Obama administration argue that the rich should be soaked, they argue that it should be done because many of the rich had the unfair advantage of having good parents. Exclamation point. That's right. It's become a crime in the mind of left-wing lunatics to love your children and raise them correctly. You see, if you do that, according to these mad leftist lunatics, you've given your children an unfair advantage and they'll be punished for it. They should pay more in taxes if you've raised them so well that they become successful. You see, you have to pay for the child of a crack dealer because he didn't have that same advantage. This is an example of liberalism as a mental disorder, perhaps the best I've seen in years. The Marxists aren't trying to soak the rich because it will help the economy. This will actually further damage the economy. Obama's army of jealous college intellectuals want to soak the rich because they see it as their moral duty to do so because they're jealous. Marxists say that religion is the opiate of the masses, but in reality, Marxism is the religion of these asses. Look, I know you worry about what's going on in Afghanistan from what's going on in the White House, but with all of that, you shouldn't have to worry about your computer on top of everything else. So go visit my advertisers at carbonite.com. They'll back up all your important files so they're safe no matter what happens. Use my offer code SAVAGE, and you're going to get 2 months free with your subscription. That's carbonite.com, offer code SAVAGE.
All the leaves are brown.
You know, California's interesting. Northern California has its own little weather system, much different than the East Coast. Being an East Coaster, it's kind of unusual to me to have the second summer. This is our real summer. September, October is our real summer, the Indian summer. You know, it's already getting colder down in the East and whatnot, as it should be. Autumn. So out here, we get the real summer now. You know, it's not cold, not windy. And then we have our own, like, set of holidays, like the Blue Angels, Navy weekend, you know. The city goes wild for it, except for the old commie scum who complain, why do they fly over our city, disturbing my reading of Leaves of Grass? I was laying in bed reading the beatnik literature of my youth, and I heard the roar of airplanes. It disturbed me as it shook my window panes and pained my lungs. But everyone likes it, except the newspapers. You know, they put it down. But people love it. So hundreds of thousands of people, you go into the city to watch the Blue Angels, and everyone who has a boat is out on the bay. They're watching the air show Thursday and a Friday and a Saturday, Sunday. But since I wasn't invited to a certain restaurant that I used to go to, I won't mention it ever again and not go there ever again either. The only one I'll mention is the one I mentioned already. So I went out alone to watch the parade of ships on my boat. 40 tons, you know. I would fill 40 tons of yacht on my own, took it out. Nobody, zero. Nobody, not even the dog. I was in one of those moods after last week, which I called Hell Week. I wanted to be alone. I didn't even want to hear a dog bark. I didn't even want the distraction of a dog barking. So I took the boat out alone. And it's not so heroic. It's only on the bay. And it's got a bow and stern thruster. So I go out, watch the parade of ships. It was kind of boring, to be frank. The big warships weren't there. There's one, like, you know, 800-foot, like, a marine amphibious land. Not that interesting. It's not like watching the Big Mo. I mean, I've seen the Big Mo at dock when it was out here, the Missouri. It's unbelievable. Or a real modern aircraft carrier, the Nimitz I was on. You say, holy God. I mean, I was honored to be aboard the Nimitz a few years ago. I don't think they'd ever have me again. The word is probably out on banned on aircraft carriers, as well as banned in Britain. But when I watch those young men in their flying machines taking off on night missions, training missions, it's like watching a rocket take off the deck. It was 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, black ocean, black sky, and all of a sudden, all you see is the afterburners on the FA-18 Hornets, and you see rockets taking off on a deck, and you just sit there shaking and shuddering with the genius of man. The only thing you pray is that we had something other than a panty waist running the military, and they could just end the war already by killing the enemy in his stronghold, wipe him off the planet already. Use some of the weapons that we paid for instead of milking us dry for more weapons that you're not going to use is all you pray when you watch the jets take off, which is why I wasn't invited back. So to make a long story short, so it's that weekend. So I go out alone. I watch the parade of ships. The first couple of ships, there were more Coast Guard ships and Navy patrol vessels and police boats and old menopausal men whose boats were converted into like patrol boats than there were observers, because they were afraid of being boarded by these schmucks with 40 caliber Glocks. Everyone was on patrol. I was afraid to even get near the ships. I never saw such a cordon like this. I didn't even dare get near. I mean, I didn't want them to come aboard. They're a pain in the neck. They once boarded my ship. I'm not very impressed with the Coast Guard, to be honest with you. I know you're supposed to glorify everyone in the uniform, but at the end of the day, you know, not everyone in the uniform is special. Some people are just idiots in uniforms with guns and clubs, and some are wonderful. I get the idiots. Not this weekend. Anyway, I go back. So, anyway, the dog isn't even here. I don't want to be with him because of this morning with the rug with the foot. I had to give him to the cleaner, and that's it. I'd like to have sent my foot out to a martinizing. I wanted to have my foot martinized after this morning. Whoa, that's a bad experience. I mean, I raise children, but that happens like once in a child rearing. That middle of the night, early morning squish, great for the sex life between husband and wife. I got to tell you, young children are the greatest thing to keep a sex life alive. Between the plastic rattles, the regurgitation and the doo-doo and eating in restaurants with the diet. Oh, wonderful thing for romance. I think that's how God sets it up that way. I don't know how. I don't understand. It's like hair on a man as he gets older. It grows in the wrong places. There's something to do with that. Sometimes I think God is a comedian, and he gets bored, and he needs a little fun, so he does these things to us. So it was a long Saturday. I didn't want to go out again when the real flying was boring as heck, and the heat wave hit us now. We get these this kind of week. Horrible. Horrible, like a Florida without humidity. I don't like it. I can't wait for the cold, which is coming back this weekend. It's after Hell Week. Forgive me for being, you know what I'm saying? I'm letting go. I'm going to get back to trickle-up poverty. I'll talk. But I'm letting go. I'm letting it out. I'm feeling relieved. All right, so it's a long, horrible day. It's worse than watching paint dry. It's like studying nuclear physics when you're a child and you don't really understand it. It's like memorizing a new language. The day went on from 6 in the morning. It was like forever. So to make a long story short, there's a guy that we know through family, younger guy, who has a large yacht, and he's a party animal, maybe a 70-foot boat. So he emails us, he likes me, you know, why don't you come on a boat, we're going to have drinks after the end of the day, blah, blah, blah. All right, whatever, figure the end of the day is like an eternity away anyway. And he's got like beautiful, I mean, he said, well, we're dressing up in the Navy and the girls are wearing Navy little sailorette outfits just for me. I needed to go see that. I needed more torture. You come aboard, the girls are wearing sailorette outfits, just what I wanted, more torment. So I wasn't sure I was going to go. All right, so the day is ending now. It's like long day's journey in tonight. I mean, where was Eugene O'Neill now that I needed him? It was like long day's journey in tonight. Finally, man. I said, how did you get through life without being a junkie? How did you avoid that pitfall with your nature? I mean, you're made of iron, man. I had to congratulate myself. I didn't even have a drink. Nothing. If I was another person, it would have been like mainline city if I was a weak person. Those are the kind of days, I mean, you say, holy God, how many hours are there in a day? You know, thanks for blessing me with so much freedom and so much health. Now what? I don't know what to do with myself. So the night falls, and I start emailing and getting emails. Well, we're lost. We can't get back in the harbor because it's an unmarked channel. I live near an unmarked channel. And the guy had a new captain. So a guy on the boat I know says, well, can you signal us from land with your lantern? I'm not kidding you. I have a very powerful. So I'll tell you what, I'll go out on a certain area, and I'll start signaling you when you're near the entrance to the harbor. This is like a few hundred yards to the right of it. So he says, all right, signals me back by email. He says, see your signal, fine. About 20 minutes later, I get a thing. We've gone aground. The captain didn't see the entrance. We're trapped here for 6 hours. So I said, oh, God, I like this guy. So I said, look, I'll tell you what. Give me a half an hour. I'll jump in my car. I'll go down to the dock. I'll get my little boat. I have 3 boats in my little Savage Navy. I have a little 22-foot Ranger tug, which I absolutely adore. A 3-cylinder, 29-horsepower Yanmar diesel, great little engine. And I said, I'll tug over and I'll get you with the searchlight. Well, it was like Cape Fear, to be honest with you. I forgot to bring my night vision goggles, legal, of course. They're just previous generation night vision. If I had gotten my night vision goggles, it would have been a whole different story. I would have been able to see. And with a searchlight, it's still very difficult to see on a dark bay at night. I don't care where you are, storm or no storm, a searchlight only lights up a certain area. It's not diffuse enough to light up like in a wide arc unless you're like a Mexican patrol boat. You know what I mean? This is a mere standing searchlight. So my fear was I was going to run aground myself or I was going to smash into a piling. And my poor dog, I had to wake him up. Oh, now I understand. It was 2 nights later. He had a fear reaction. Poor Teddy. Okay, I'll be right back.
Savage.
So, okay, I get the tug on that dark, moonless night. The water looks like Cape Fear. So they're aground now in a 70-foot yacht full of, like, younger, you know, good-looking people. I've been partying all afternoon watching the Blue Angels. And they're stuck now for 6 hours, and I'll come to the rescue. So I get my boat, my 22-foot tug, and cha-cha-cha-cha-cha. And all of a sudden, I feel the boat dragging in the dark. I almost went aground because I turned too fast over to him into shallow water. I have 2-foot draft on my boat, but I was in less than that. I had less water than that. I said, oh, you idiot, you. Now you're going to go aground with the dog for 6 hours. Luckily, I was able to engineer my way out of it. I just did a few maneuvers, blah, blah, blah. I went further out, came, so I'm coming in around them now. I'm coming in from behind them in the channel that he was looking for. And I said, you'll be seeing some flashing the lights, blah, blah, blah. So I get next to them and we throw them the lines. I throw them the lines and the captain's like very, very humiliated. He was an older captain. He didn't know the waters. I right away thought of him because I didn't want him to feel bad. I said, oh, no, don't worry, captain. I said real loudly. I said, I've seen Navy captains go aground here during the day because this channel is so poorly marked by these SOBs who run this place. They do it out of spite. There are a bunch of old SOBs here who want you to run aground. Don't feel bad. I didn't want the young guy to get over, blah, blah, blah. So I said, come on, grab the boat. Let's get aboard. I want to get out of here. So the guy I went to get, friend of the family, he's right there with his bag. And the others aren't there. Now, I'm here to rescue them. And they're like, they think I'm a water taxi. A couple of these people were so, like, whatever, into the mood of the day, they didn't even know that there was a boat waiting. They didn't even know they went aground, I don't think. And I'm saying, hey, Johnny, will you get him up here? I want to get out of here, man. I'm just, like, bouncing against your boat in the dark. I want to get you ashore and go home. It's, like, very late already with the dog. Dog's scared. So he's saying, hey, come on, man. Let's go. We're going, going, going. So, like, the girls are, like, with high heels now are coming on the boat and then taking the high heels off. It's, like, they thought I was, like, a water taxi that was hired. So now the guy who owns the boat, very nice guy, he comes out like last. They're screaming for, where are you? Comes out in patent leather shoes, dressed up like an admiral with a bottle of wine in his hand. He says, great, where are we going? And he says, we're not going anywhere, the guy says. He's here to take you off. He says, take me where? He says, to the dock. He says, no, I thought we were going to go hang out from another party. You hear this? It was very comedic. I mean, in its own way, there was a lot of comedy in this story. So he didn't come. He stayed aboard his ship with the captain. He figured, well, what's the rush? So I took everyone to the dock, and I went back and got home late. The dog, he did a great thing in the middle of the night. But I think the fear must have hit the dog the next night. That's a little story, not a big deal. I got to tell you this as a side note. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. Great callers. I got the best callers in the world on this radio show. You know, there are differences, I'm telling you. There are differences in radio shows. I think that I get some of the best callers in the country. I've said it before. And I know why, too. I don't have to say it, all right? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Nathan in Houston, Texas, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Dr. Savage. Hey, I have a quick question for you. I would really, really, really love to take trickle-up poverty into the polling booth in Houston, Texas. However, I don't want to be misconstrued as electioneering. Can you help me out on this?
Well, hold on now. Wait a minute. This is a very intriguing legal question. Is there a rule that says you cannot take a book into a polling place? For example, can a woman bring Harry Potter into a polling place? Can you bring a novel into a polling place? Or can they say you can't bring a book into a polling place? I've never heard of it.
What's best is early voting is at the public library.
I would suggest this, and I think you've just broken the code on the entire election. I would suggest that everyone listening to the show who has purchased Trickle Up Poverty, bring it into a polling place. Don't open it up. Don't talk about it. Is there an election law lawyer in this house who can answer this question? Is it permissible to bring a book into a polling place? If it is not permissible to bring any book into a polling place, that's one thing. Can voting officials say you can't bring that book into a polling place? I could tie the courts up for the next 10 years if they try this. What if thousands of you know, the book sold, I don't know, about 50,000 by now, if not more. I don't know what the number is yet, maybe closer to 100,000. What if 100,000 of you brought the book into a polling place on election night, the night that you vote, or the day you vote, rather? What would happen if they say, you can't bring that book in here? And you say, what do you mean I can't bring that book in here? She has a copy of a novel in her hand. And they say, well, that's different. They're able to determine which book is allowed and which book is not allowed? Is that not the equivalent of censorship? Is that not the equivalent of interfering with your First Amendment rights. This is a fascinating idea. And I'm going to encourage you to consider it. And we're going to get the answer to this in the next few days, by the way. Nathan, I'm sending you another copy to bring into the polling place. Trickle Up Poverty, Stopping Obama's Attack on Our Borders, Economy, and Security. 1-800-449-8255. This is amazing. That's an amazing idea. Is it okay to bring TUP when voting? Well, we're going to find out. I don't know. Books are allowed in our... You cannot bring electioneering material in, but who says the book is electioneering material? You're just reading a nonfiction book. I mean, what if you brought a copy of another best-selling book in with you? Would they say that's okay and this book is not okay? How would that be legal? This is going to be a very intriguing battle. It's going to be a very, very intriguing battle, believe me. You know, this has been like a shot in the arm for me. It's been a long time in coming. I've been laboring under this, writing this book, sweating the book. The Tuesday morning wake up and going down to that TV studio was the toughest thing I've done in my adult life in a very long time. I don't like television. And guess what? It went off without a hitch.
Savage.